It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Three ball, Max Landis.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
We are taking you home on a Monday. It is time to put work day number one in the books. One down, four to go with this work week. This is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy. And, of course, you can be connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Give us your thoughts, your comments, your questions, and suggestions at 46862. Of course, don't forget, too, coming up this Saturday, we're your home for Purdue basketball in the Final Four. We've got coverage starting at 5 p.m. this Saturday with the tip coming up at 6:09. Boilermakers will take on North Carolina State in the first of the two Final Four games, the national semifinals on Saturday. Don't miss your Boilermakers coverage with your home for the Boilermakers all season long, 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. It's time to almost turn the page to baseball.
Oh, man.
Of course, Major League Baseball already underway.
Yes, sir.
And what a heroic win by the Cincinnati Reds. Did you follow this yesterday, Adam?
No.
You missed out.
I did.
Reds were down 5-3, bottom of the ninth inning. Down to their last out as the first two batters in the bottom of the ninth both made outs. So they were two outs, bases empty, down 5-3, bottom of the ninth. All they get is a double and then back-to-back home runs. And the Reds walk it off 6-5 over the Nationals. Little feel-good story for a Reds fan.
A starving Reds fan. Well, the Cubs do get the win over the Rockies today, 5-0. Still waiting on that rain delay in Chicago.
White Sox game. That they're going to get that in because I just looked at the radar and that rain went and passed through. Unless the White Sox just do not want to continue playing.
they might not want to.
No, they're getting whooped on by the Atlanta Braves.
Sure are.
What is it, 6-0 at this point?
6-0 and runners on first and third when they resume.
Yeah, and the Braves. Braves are awfully tough.
Yeah.
Braves and Dodgers, I almost feel like you can just Sharpie that in, you know, for your National League Championship Series because
a lot of talent.
Yeah, both those rosters pretty loaded. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. But we have Tin Caps Baseball. And you know the season's close because we got a roster, an official roster announced by the Padres.
Yeah.
For Fort Wayne Tin Caps 2024 opening day. And a lot of familiar names. A lot of guys returning. Maybe some you expect, some you didn't expect. Henry Baez is back. Miguel Cienfuegos is back. Couple of key pitchers. Ruben Galindo, who was here, then went down to Lake Elsinore. He's back. Will Gerdes, Jose Araldo, Johan Gonzalez. You've got Dylan Lesko, who was came up late in the season last year with a lot of fanfare. One of the top prospects for the Padres, a right-handed pitcher out of Buford, Georgia. Lesko is going to be back. Both Morgans, David and Tyler, who both pitch, by the way. So they will both be part of the pitching staff. And Ethan Routson is back. I believe this is for his third year with the Tin Caps. If you don't know the name, you might know the pitching style. He is the submariner, the side armor that comes out there and pitches, usually in later innings. So solid pitching staff. Then you look at the catchers. And you've got three guys that were here last year, Colton Bender, Anthony Villar, and Ethan Salas.
There we go.
Yeah, the kid is growing up. He is now all of 18 years old, and he's going to be back. And last year, of course, he came through really for a cup of coffee. He was here, I think, for one series and then was promoted to Double A. And they decided best to put him here, get his confidence, get him a chance to grow at this level, not rush him. And so he is going to start the season with the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. Also, infielders include Nerwillian Cedeno.
Yeah.
He had a lot of season last year that he was lost to injury. Griffin Dorsching.
Oh, yeah, big guy.
The big blonde with the
Viking
the
hair.
Mullet. Yeah, yeah. Whatever. Griffin Dorsching is going to be back. 6'4", 250-pounder out of Greendale, Wisconsin. Lucas Dunn, for his third season, comes back. Albert Fabian, Devin Ortiz, and Kervin Pichardo. I got to remember that. For 2 years, we called him Kervin, and now we're told it's Kervin. So Kervin Pichardo will be back also with the Tin Caps this year. And in the outfield, they've got just three outfielders listed on the roster. But when you look at a guy like Fabian, he can be an outfielder. Lucas Dunn can play some outfield. So, the three official outfielders on the roster, Homer Bush Jr., one of the higher-ranked prospects for the Padres, a 6'3", 200-pounder.
Great name.
23 years old. He will be here. Also, Kai Murphy and Tyler Robertson. Robertson had a nice stint at the end of the year with the Tin Caps.
Hard to root against a baseball player whose name is Homer.
Homer, yeah. Homer.
But you mentioned it, that the Tin Caps have a lot of familiar faces. 23 of the 30 players on the roster have experience with the Tin Caps.
Yeah, so it's probably the most recognizable roster that Tin Caps have had on an opening day.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to agree.
I'm completely making that up with nothing to back it up.
Nope.
But just
from all the faces?
Just when you look at the list and think, man, that's a lot of guys that were here in part last year or ended the season here.
Hopefully some of that experience might make for a playoff push. Who knows?
Well, high expectations just based on one document, the roster. That's it. Looked at the roster.
We're going to the playoffs.
Sign up for the championship now, folks.
Anything but Final Four is a bust.
Yeah. We're the Boilermakers. We're going all the way to the Final Four. Well, and that brings up a question. How satisfied are you as a Boilermakers fan? At this point now, are you free rolling? Do you feel like, okay, we made it. We got that monkey off our back. We're in a Final Four. We finally got there. It's been 44 years, but we've cleared that hurdle. We're satisfied. We're happy. Now let the chips fall where they may. Or if they get knocked off, then are you still going to be upset with the season and feel like this team fell short of what the expectation should have been?
46862.
46862 is our text line. 46862.
I think that it's kind of a combination of both. I think that the weight has been lifted, but I also think that just seeing how good Purdue's been in this tournament, I think that you can also expect them to continue the run.
I just hope that they keep that level of intensity and fire, because they seem to start this tournament on a mission. And, they didn't celebrate victories. In the locker room, they walked in like they expected to win, and they're looking for their next opponent. I mean, they did not, you see a lot of those locker rooms where they're spraying the water bottles and jumping up and down and dancing. Now, that was not the Boilermakers. The Boilermakers came, and it was all business. And now you see them actually celebrate the fact that they've made it to the Final Four. And it is something to be celebrated. I'm not saying they were wrong to celebrate because, they... If you look, it's not easy to get to the Final Four.
You're just wondering if the attitude has changed between winning and an Elite Eight versus a Final Four.
Can they turn that fire back on that they've been playing with, that edge that they've had about them? Mm-hmm. Zach Edey with that look in his eyes. Braden Smith with that fierce determination. Because that's what they're going to need. Because right now, North Carolina State is playing with tons of confidence. I mean, North Carolina State, throughout the record. Because it's not a team that is thinking of itself as a team that was 17-13 at the end of the regular season. You know what they're thinking of themselves as? a team right now that's 9-0 since the regular season ended. That's what they think. They think of themselves as an undefeated, deserving ACC team that should be in this position. And so it's going to be a challenge for Purdue, even though I look at this and think Purdue has an advantage to me almost every position. And we'll see if that plays out on Saturday.
I think they'll be able to get it. I believe in Matt Painter. You know, we saw that same intensity that we talked about against, Grambling State and against Utah State. So I think that the Boilermakers will be prepared no matter the opponent. I think that's what we've seen.
And here's the question. Where does that fire come from? Because Matt Painter is not a guy who's a real fiery coach on the sideline.
Right.
He's not Brad Underwood. Nate Oates is one of those guys that shows a lot of emotion and fire on the sideline. Matt Painter seems very calm, very collected, doesn't seem to get too worked up, even with officials, because there were a couple of calls that I thought could have gone, Purdue's way yesterday. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, Tennessee fans feel like Purdue got all the whistles. Well, the point was Tennessee was the one doing all the fouling. It was pretty clear that Tennessee was going to try to play one-on-one, try to cheat and show a double, but maybe not always come. But their only option when they were in one-on-one situations that close to the basket was to hack him. I mean, they had to challenge the shot. When you go up at 6'9 and challenge a 7'4's hook shot, you're going to hit his wrist. You're not going to get up all the way to the ball. And they hacked, they hit, Zach Edey had battle scars on his arms during the course of the game. So it was, I thought it was called fairly. And I thought it was one of the games where it was not, we have to pick and choose the fouls on Edey, otherwise we'll be sending him to the line the entire game. I thought the officials decided if it's a foul, we call it. And if Edey shoots 30 free throws, he shoots 30. But if we see a foul that is a foul, we are going to blow the whistle and call it. And as a result, Edey went to the line 22 times, and he didn't exactly have a great percentage. 14 of 22, and one of the eight misses didn't hit anything.
Right.
Air ball from the free throw line.
That was Painter saying he could have 50 if he hit all his free throws.
Exactly. I don't know how many front ends he missed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he missed too many front ends, maybe one or two at most.
Mm.
I mean, you got to realize you only have, three front ends of one-on-ones now?
Right, right.
Seventh, eighth, and ninth fouls are the only one-on-ones you have. But Edey finishes with 40 points for the Boilermakers as they pick up the 72-66 win over Tennessee, North Carolina State now next in the Final Four. And once again, we've got your coverage. Pre-game on the Purdue Radio Network starts at 5 o'clock this Saturday and the tip just after 6 o'clock. From Phoenix, Arizona, which I was there. I don't know if you saw my tweet last night.
Yeah.
I made it look like I was actually there. I wasn't there. But we were there in November.
Right.
And we played in the arena that's right across the street from State Farm Stadium. And so I took a picture of the stadium back in November. And so after the game, I said, I'm here already. Where are you all at? But you can check that out. Of course, I'm on Twitter, at Brett Rump Sports. You're on Twitter.
Adam Sports Radio.
And you also are pulling the bookend double today on people's work days. If people think, wait a minute, I think I heard him in the morning. Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm.
You were filling in for Justin Kenny this morning.
Sure was. Had a nice time on Caleb and Kenny, but I guess it was Caleb and Lundy in the morning today. But had a fun time. We did a lot of discussion about Purdue, talked to some fans and heard what the win meant to them. And it was a fun time this morning.
Yeah, and you'll be back again Friday.
Yes.
And during the week, we got Shannon Griffith coming in the next couple of mornings. And who we got coming in on Thursday?
Eric Dukevich on Thursday.
Dude.
The morning show.
Well, dude's going to pull a double then on Thursday.
Well, I have to call him, yeah.
Because he's going to be joining our show.
Yep.
Dukevich joining the show on Thursday morning with Caleb and Kenny in the morning, 7 to 9, right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. By the way, did you see this whole issue with the women's court?
I sure did.
In Portland?
Man, just another negative stain on this process of holding the women's tournament. You know, they had those things a couple years ago that kind of showed the negative conditions of what it was like for the women at their tournament. And we're back here with another thing.
But, you know, what's funny is the day before, I saw this post with a video showing the court being constructed.
Yeah.
And the company that made it put out this video bragging about being the ones that designed and created the court, showing all the painting and all. And they even showed them putting on the three-point lines. And I'm like, they might want to pull that off social media at this point, because I don't know if this is a bragging point for your company.
No.
That the 2 3-point lines ended up at different distances. And it wasn't that one was the right distance and one was too long. It was actually the right distance and one was too short.
9 inches.
9 inches short. And so the one team during the course of a half would be able to step in and hit threes from a shorter distance. The coaches decided it's okay, it's going to work out. Both of us will get 20 minutes at that end of the floor and let the chips fall where they may. But what's interesting is statistically, the team shot better on the normal distance.
Right. I mentioned that to Caleb. You know, you get used to shooting from a certain spot.
It's muscle memory. It's like you're at the three-point line. It's a certain shot, and you take it. And all of a sudden, when you're taking it 9 inches closer, and you take what you think is your three-point shot.
Probably a lot of them went long, I would imagine.
Yeah, probably hit the back rim quite often.
Yeah.
But
I can relate.
Yeah. You being such a three-point shooter, you're dialed in. But, so what a crazy situation. And they ended up playing with the court. They said that the courts here in the future will all be checked and replaced if necessary, and the three-point line will be the proper distance from here on out.
Ugh.
But a big one coming up tonight. We're going to have to talk about this. Iowa, Caitlin Clark, LSU, Angel Reese and company, they are meeting in a regional championship.
I'm excited.
I told you when the draw came out. They were setting this up. I said, this is wrong to have the national championship game from a year ago played out in the rematch as a regional championship. Only one of these two teams will be playing in the Final Four. I think it's wrong, especially the fact they put LSU as a 3 seed. They could have put them anywhere. But and then USC, UConn, the other side of the bracket, and they'll play tonight, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Paige Bueckers against Juju Watkins. Come on, you got star power on the stage tonight in women's college basketball.
Absolutely, my friend. I'm looking forward to it.
We will take a break because we have got star power on the other side of the timeout. We've got Don Fisher. It's our final 15 minutes with Fish for the year. And we'll talk a lot of subjects, including basketball, men's and women's. But we also will take a peek ahead to football. They're in their spring practices, and Don Fisher has been in attendance. So we'll ask him about what's happening with the Hoosiers on the gridiron. That's all coming up next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
You're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy. And coming up on Friday, the Tin Caps get underway. That's right. We're going to have Tin Caps coverage starting on Friday. 6:05 will be the first pitch. That means we'll step aside a few minutes early to turn it over to Tin Caps Baseball as they open up at Great Lakes. Of course, the home opener comes up on Tuesday, April 9th at Parkview Field, as they'll take on Lake County at 6:35. But, it's this Friday. Things start for real for the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. And, of course, all season long, you can enjoy Tin Caps baseball right here at your home of the Tin Caps, 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Well, it is that time. It's our final visit of the year with the legendary Hall of Fame, a play-by-play voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, Don Fisher. We call it our 15 minutes with Fish, and he joins us now on the guest line. Of course, Indiana basketball, a thing of the past, but it is Final Four weekend coming up, Don, and I know you take in some basketball, even if it's not the Hoosiers, and you watch Purdue make it to the Final Four. I mean, I don't know. If you're a diehard Hoosiers fan, do you have emotion attached to this? I mean, personally, I like seeing a team in the state do well. But your thoughts on Purdue making it into the Final Four?
Well, congratulations to the Boilermakers. There's no question. You got to be proud if you're a Boilermaker fan, and proud from a Big Ten conference perspective as well. And, of course, I know a lot of people, you know, well, you can't be black and gold if you're cream and crimson.
Yeah.
That, I agree with that in some respects, but I also think you've got to root for the teams that are in your home state when they do as well as they have. And Indiana State's another one that's done pretty well, too, in the NIT. So I'm rooting for those guys as well. So, yeah, I think here's what I will tell you. I think the Final Four is going to be very interesting, and I do think it's going to come down to King Kong versus Godzilla in the championship game. Because we know that Zach Edey is absolutely special, and I don't think the Klingon kid will take a backseat to him either. I think that's going to be a very interesting matchup if they both get to the championship game, and I think that's my picks to get there at this juncture. I think UConn's playing better than anybody else in the country. They've destroyed almost every opponent that they've played here in the tournament. But I think Purdue can give them everything that they want. And if Purdue plays their best basketball, they'll have a great chance to win.
Well, you look at the season, and the whole season has basically told us that UConn, Purdue, and Houston were head and shoulders above everybody else. And unfortunately for Houston, they get an injury to a key player at a bad time. And so they end up dropping out.
Yeah, they had two injuries. In fact, they had one of their best defensive players who was a starter went down with, I don't know if it was an Achilles or some kind of a foot injury. He was out at the end of the season, and then they lost this the Shed kid, and that kid was special.
Yeah.
And he was their best player, I think. And to lose two guys like that at the end of the year, it was pretty much the doom scenario for Kelvin Sampson and his ball club. But you're right. I mean, this tournament has been interesting to me, Brent. I don't know if I know you've watched a bunch of it too.
Mm-hmm.
I think this tournament, the officials have just flat out let them play. I mean, I haven't seen. I know there are fouls that are called. But my Lord, it looks like there's a foul on every play down the floor.
Yeah.
And they're just letting them play, which I'm not averse to that. But I do think the teams that have a little more depth have the opportunity to probably survive a lot longer than the teams that don't have much.
Well, and I think it is a very physical game right now, and I think that's why you see games that are like 23-21 at halftime.
Yeah.
You know, just it's kind of like, you know, in the NFL, when you allow the corners to clutch and grab receivers, you see scoring go down. And then all of a sudden you make some rules, take that stuff away. And so I'm sure the NCAA will evaluate, do we want points, do we want defense? Because right now defense seems to be winning. Although there's some terrifically skilled offensive players, and one of those is Zach Edey. Don, all your years that you have covered college basketball, is there a comp? I mean, I'm trying to think who I would comp Zach Edey to as far as a guy that is almost unguardable. He dominates each game. I mean, it's like you have to either stop him or he's going to win it for the Boilers. I mean, he's one of those guys that's just a real anomaly in college basketball. And I don't know if there is a comp.
I don't know either, but the closest thing that I can remember, having watched this guy play, the closest thing, and he's a totally different player in the sense of his physique, at least from the standpoint of physical size, along with the height. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was pretty good.
Yeah.
and I saw him play as Lou Alcindor when he was a freshman at UCLA in a triple header at Chicago Stadium in Chicago. A bunch of my buddies and I drove up there and watched him play. We actually found a way into the arena. We got into the arena with tickets, but we found a way to get back toward where the players entered. And when Lou Alcindor, at that time Lou Alcindor, came into the building, he had to duck to get into the doorway. And when he walked in, our necks were craned upward. Looking at this guy, he was the biggest thing we'd ever seen in college basketball. And it was pretty special, but I do think that Lou Alcindor and later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar might be comparable to a guy that was that much of a factor from a physical standpoint as a freshman or a sophomore, even a junior or a senior. I think he was one guy that was probably similar in that regard. Not kind of the same physique, you know what I mean? But they did have the same height factor.
Yeah, and in a day and age where you didn't have as many of the guys that came out 7 foot, you know, and so there's fewer guys really to match up with Lou Alcindor. I remember as a kid, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated watching those great UCLA teams.
Yep.
And then on to the Milwaukee Bucks before ending up at the Lakers. All right, we got to talk more in Indiana sports because the women's basketball team put up a heck of a fight and a gallant effort. But unfortunately, they come up short to just a dominant women's basketball team in South Carolina.
Well, obviously, South Carolina is a special team, too, unbeaten at this point in the season. And I'm not sure anybody can beat them as they go into their championship. But you've got to give the Lady Hoosiers credit with another tremendous year for them. Terry Morin has done absolutely a spectacular job with that program. They get to the Sweet 16. They couldn't quite get it done against South Carolina, but they dug themselves too big a hole in the first half. They were down 22 at one point and came back from that 22-point deficit to get to, I think, got it to 3 points at the end. Toward the end of the ball game there, just could not finish it. But a great effort by the Lady Hoosiers, and without doubt, they become a juggernaut, and unfortunately they're losing Mackenzie Holmes and Sarah Scalia, but Terry Morin has rebuilt that program, and there's no question they'll be good again next year. Whether they'll be as good as they have been or not without Mackenzie Holmes and Sarah Scalia, but I think that they're going to have another really good team next year. And here's the other thing that they've done. They've energized the Hoosier Nation for women's college basketball. Mm-hmm. They averaged over 10,000 fans a ball game this year. That's just tremendous. It used to be 2,000, and that was when Mackenzie Holmes was a freshman. So think about what they've done over the last 4 or 5 years now in regard to the crowds and people getting excited about women's basketball. It's just been spectacular.
Well, and it might not have been 2,000 if it wasn't for Tyra Buss. So,
yeah, well, that's true.
So it has definitely come a long way. Hey, I got to talk about men's basketball recruiting. Of course, you know, we've talked about the fact that Indiana didn't have anybody in their 2024 recruiting class. Well, that changed over the last week. Bryson right. Tucker announces he's committing to the Hoosiers. It's one. There we go.
That's exactly right. And this kid was a McDonald's All-American, I think ranked 13th in the class of 2024 recruits out of high school. A very talented kid, 6'6", 190, swing-type player, plays the three and the four, but probably the three more so than anything else, and maybe even some of that two-spot. Whatever the case, this kid is a talented young man, and everybody tells me that he's got a tremendous basketball IQ, really smart kid, really understands the game. I think that's a great start with the transfer portal being the next up, because they're going to need six scholarships, or they have six scholarships available, and they've got some kids to come in to take a look at them. Leland Walker, a kid from Eastern Kentucky, a former Indianapolis North Central player, had a great year this past year, was first team all A-Sun in their conference out of Eastern Kentucky. He's a point guard, 6'1". He's taking a look at Indiana today, based on what I have understood. A Louisville big man by the name of Brandon Huntley Hatfield, one of the most improved players in the ACC this past year at 6'10", 240. He's taking a look at IU in mid-April. So they've got some guys on the line, so to speak, but they've got six spots to fill.
Mm-hmm.
They did get a commitment from Mackenzie Mbako and Malik Renew over the past week and a half or so to announce that they'll be back, along with Trey Galloway, Anthony Leal, Gabe Cups, and a kid named Ja'Kai Newton, who's been on the roster all this past year but has been out with an injury to his knee for the past 2 years now, basically. He played a little bit his senior year of high school and then re-injured the knee. Hopefully he is 100%. He is a physical specimen at 6'3" and about 205 pounds. He looks like a football player almost with his physique, but he is a very talented basketball player that may help them if he can stay healthy. That's the question mark on him. But they've got six scholarships that they can still give out to transfer portal players, and I know that they're in on several.
Of course, the transition to football, it is spring practice time, and Kurt Cignetti, for the first time, has his Hoosiers getting ready for the upcoming season. A lot of eyes on quarterback, but what do you see as the biggest change for the Hoosiers if they try to kind of take the first step forward under Coach Cignetti?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed, I watched their practice. I've seen every practice, every spring practice thus far. I think that's five. I've seen each of them. I am really impressed with his organization. I'm impressed with his coaches and how they go about their business. And it is a business. They're practicing in the stadium to get the newest faces because they got a ton of new faces, probably almost 40 players that are brand new to this program this year out of the portal and through the freshman class that they recruited. They've got a lot of new faces, a lot of interesting-looking players, to say the least. Their quarterback, the kid you mentioned, Curtis Rourke, is the transfer from Ohio, who looks special to me. He really has all the tools that you're looking for in a 6'5", 220-pound quarterback, very accurate with his throwing. The skill positions on the offensive side, Brett, have really impressed me. They've got a bunch of incoming running backs that are transfer portal guys. They all look almost the same. I'm not kidding you. They've got four guys, 5'10", 5'11", 210, 205 to 210 pounds. All are fast as lightning based on what I've seen thus far. And these guys are all going to play. I mean, they're flat out that good. All of them can play. Donovan McCulley leads the receiving group. That's probably about eight or nine players strong right now. I'm just telling you right now that the skill position players on this football team, the groupings are the best that I've seen in a long, long time. I'm really impressed with what he did in the transfer portal, what Cignetti did in the transfer portal, and what his coaches have been able to do in that regard. And Bob Bostead, of course, has stayed on as the offensive line coach, who did a tremendous job of kind of getting that side of the football fixed as far as the interior line positions are concerned. They've got a bunch of guys, and I think it's going to be a really fun football team to watch. I can't tell you that much about defense yet because I've really been concentrating on the offensive side of the football. Probably the last five or six practices I'll look at the defensive side, but I'm telling you right now, people want to see a good football team and a team that's going to be different than it was a year ago at Indiana come to the spring game on April 18th. It's a Thursday night, and you will be, I think, excited.
That is it for the season with Don Fisher. Don, hit him far and straight, and have a great summer.
Brett, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you. That is Don Fisher, final time this year, joining us with our 15 Minutes with Fish. And, of course, it's always a pleasure and always an honor to have Don Fisher share some time with us each and every Monday here on the Sports Rush. We got to fly. We'll keep the show moving. And it is a Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Big congrats to Canterbury on Saturday. Got a chance to go down to Gainbridge Fieldhouse and call the state championship game in Class 1A as Canterbury surprised quite a few. I know the media room, which is a lot of the guests in the media room before the game, are the Indianapolis area media.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of thought that Bethesda was unbeatable. And Canterbury gets the victory. Heck of a game for John Parent. The forward for the Canterbury Cavaliers. He finished, I believe, with 22 points, but Canterbury gets the win over Bethesda Christian, claims the first state championship for boys basketball for Canterbury. If you're interested in listening to a replay of this game, we do have it available on our Fort Wayne High School Sports podcast page. That's right. In fact, replays of all of our games throughout the season, even going back to football, can be heard, and that is Fort Wayne High School Sports. You can search for it wherever you listen to your favorite podcast and get game replays, either all or part. You can scroll through, you can listen to just the finishes, whatever you want to hear, but we do archive all of our broadcasts, including the state championship, and we had a couple of them in football. We have one here in basketball, and so congratulations to Canterbury. Coming up tonight, it is the Elite Eight for the women, and Iowa LSU starts it off. Boy, that's going to be a heck of a game with Caitlin Clark versus LSU, Kim Mulkey, who it's been kind of a tumultuous week for Kim Mulkey, the coach of LSU, with the article which the LA Times has since apologized for, and then the Washington Post story, which she claimed was going to be a hit piece, and it ended up, yeah, it was critical of a lot of things she did, but it also was presented in what I thought was very fair manner, and so I thought she had much ado about nothing. I mean, if you don't want somebody to write that you're a tough coach that's very demanding and you put winning above all else, including personal relationships, then change your style, because that's exactly what she does. And she should be the first one that admits that, you know, her demeanor, her attitude or competitiveness, it puts winning above all else. And she has basically left some people kind of high and dry and lost relationships because of it. And that was pointed out in the story. But certainly it wasn't one of those where they were trying to take, I think, unfair jabs at her, which is what she was trying to present in the press conference, the preemptive press conference that took place a week before.
Yeah, and almost left me wondering, did she think there might have been something else in the story? Yeah.
Does she know something that we still don't? Here's my guess, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She came out with the preemptive press conference. She may have thought there were going to be certain stories, because maybe she learned some of the people they talked to and what those people were saying. And so she might have thought that it was going to go a much stronger direction against her.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my guess. Washington Post probably took some time to really review every detail. And they probably didn't want it to be a he said, she said nothing. Because that was one point that she made in her press conference, was that she never really had a chance to speak to them. Now, they gave her every opportunity. But I think for the Washington Post, just to be safe, probably what they did was they went through, they edited the copy of the story and took out whatever couldn't be verified. In other words, if one person said it, it's not in the story unless we can verify what they're saying to be true. And I think the Washington Post just wanted to be careful that they weren't exposing themselves to anything that could be litigated. And Kim Mulkey had already come out and claimed that she was going to throw the legal team at them and file lawsuits if they said anything that she thought wasn't true. Well, you know, if you get into a situation where she says one thing, Kim Mulkey says one thing, and you present both cases to the court, it could go either way. And so I think what the Washington Post decided to do was probably water it down a little bit. You probably take some of the edge off the article by doing this, but I think they probably went through and said, let's make sure whatever we put in here is independently verified. If someone says something, let's have a witness that says, yes, that happened. That way we always have two. And if she comes back and say it didn't happen, we can say, well, not only did they say it, but we had someone else that witnessed it that also confirmed it to us before we put it to print. That's my guess of what, you know, the 5 or 6 day delay before the short story was published. I think that's probably what happened. I can't verify that. Once again, I don't have verification on my assumption. But you see how easy it was to convince you that that could be the story. But anyway, the article came out. So tonight it's LSU and Iowa. Who's a greater villain in your mind to women's college basketball? Kim Mulkey, Angel Reese, or Caitlin Clark?
I would say Kim Mulkey, but she doesn't actually play. She's just the coach.
But if you went to watch this game tonight and root against one of the two teams,
yeah,
are you rooting against Caitlin Clark because of her antics, always complaining about calls? Are you rooting against LSU because sometimes maybe the same circumstances, but
yeah,
sometimes they get a little cocky. They have their attitudes. Kim Mulkey sometimes over the top with her arguments with officials. Who would be the bigger villain so you would root against them and root for the other team? Because I think both these teams are teams you could love if you're just a basketball fan, because they're really talented women's basketball teams. But you could also go into tonight's game and think, I'm never going to root for that team because I can't stand blank. And that's probably understandable as well. But is it Caitlin Clark? Is she the villain? And so you root for LSU? Or is LSU with Angel Reese, maybe it's Kim Mulkey, they're the villain, so you root for Iowa? Because I think some people will be going that direction tonight.
Definitely, definitely. I think I'm going to root for Iowa just because I'd like to see Clark kind of have like an MJ North Carolina moment. That'd be pretty cool. But before she heads to the WNBA.
Yeah.
And LSU obviously already got their win with Angel. So, yeah, I'd like to see Clark win.
All right, so we've talked about Final Four and Purdue making it, and it's the first trip to the Final Four in 44 years. All right, Adam, so here's the question.
Oh, goodness.
Prior to 1980, when was the last team that Purdue made it to the Final Four? The last year that Purdue made it to the Final Four prior to 1980.
Was it
is like an edition of Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia on a Monday.
Was it with the Rick Mount team, or is
you can't
provide that information?
I'm not providing clues. That's a pretty good place to start, but
1969. Hey, I was close.
You were close. You were closer than probably a lot of people would have been. 1969, Purdue made it to the Final Four. Then they came back in 1980, so it was 11 years. And then they didn't show up again for 44 years. But here they are.
Here they are.
Heading to the Final Four. We'll take a break. We'll come back. It's a Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
This is Mike Nutter, team president of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. And you're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Getting down to the last couple of weeks of NBA basketball as teams start to clinch their playoff spots, and the Pacers still trying to secure a top six position. They've got a couple of big ones this week against the Nets. Tonight, 6:30, we'll cover the Pacers-Nets. We'll turn it over to the pregame at 6:30. By the way, ran into a lot of our friends at Gainbridge Fieldhouse at the state championships on Saturday. Saw Matt Taylor, voice of the Colts.
Yeah.
He was working radio for the IHSA Champions Network. Also saw Pat Boylan after the game was over. Speaking of Pacers radio coverage, part of the Pacers on Radio and Indiana Fever play-by-play, had a chance to see him. Of course, Greg Rakestraw, we talked to you last week. He wasn't coming until the evening, so I didn't have the honor and privilege to run into Greg Rakestraw, but saw quite a few people that we talked to in the media. And have on the show regularly. It was
awesome.
A nice little trip down for the state championships on Saturday. Once again, Pacers Nets on the air tonight. Tomorrow morning, be sure to wake up with Caleb and Kenny in the morning. Caleb has guest host Shannon Griffith joining him for the next couple of mornings. If you miss any of the show, catch up by going to our podcast page. You can search for it by name with the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. That will do it for us. Big thanks to Dylan Sin and Don Fisher. Thanks to Adam Lundy. This has been the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.